When the sun sets on Worthy Farm, Glastonbury Festival's southeast corner transforms into its most popular alter ego. And as the common reaches its point of metamorphosis into a late night mecca, you can see it change shape. You can feel the bass pounding through your body, starting at your toes and moving up through your chest into your head. People fill every available space. And as you roll in from block 9 to your left is the temple, a round Colosseum type amphitheatre that has a mysterious appearance. The walls are constructed from canal lock gates, and it gives a sense of shelter. It's like it's keeping at bay whatever is inside. Guarded by this strange metallic deer all around that shoots flames into the sky at the drop of a drum and bass beat. But as you walk through the entrance, you're greeted by this massive, luminous-eyed, giant, green-winged head with the DJs tucked inside. However, mostly what you'll notice as you enter is the 4,000 ravers dancing all around you, each visible to one another, equals under the eyes of the temple. If you wander around the lock gates, you'll arrive at the Rum Shack with its blue-green rusted arches looping over flashing lights and bold red lettering announcing itself as somewhere fun, vibrant and crucially full of rum. On the right is the Mezcal Bar, with Latin music pouring out and dancers lighting up this tiny venue's joyful energy. But emerging from the darkness is the Totem, flashing with greens and pinks, the mottled surfaces of the set glowing and pulsing with the light. This new venue rises from the earth, a spirit being, a sacred object, and a party paradise. We caught up with Emily Dust, an incredible DJ who played on the opening night. All right. So, firstly, do you want to tell us? We're going straight in. Do you want to tell us about Hornet Gate? We saw on Instagram.
Oh my God.
Big deal.
Yeah, so I played Totem last night, which is an amazing stage. It's like got an incredible like LED display. There's smoke, there's plants, don't know if they're real, but they look amazing. The lighting's excellent, so it's like a really brilliant space to play. And I feel like when you play somewhere like that, you can really go like wherever you want because the audience are already in it. And so yeah, I was really excited to play. The set was going really well, it was packed, there was like a full crowd of people, and I looked down on my shirt and there was like, I was like, is that a leaf? And then I was like, oh my God, it's a hornet. And it was probably about 2 inches long. So I tried to like shake it off. The hornet was not, it was there for like life. So I was like, oh my God, this is terrifying. Like I can't get stung by a hornet in the middle of my set. So I turned around to tell people behind me and I was like, there's a hornet on me. But because nobody could hear me, and it was quite dark, so they couldn't see. They just all went, yeah! So they cheered as I turned around, and I was like, there's a hornet on me! And I kept, like, looking around, and I was like, the audience are going to think, what's she doing? Because she's just turned away from the crowd. And I was just, like, looking, and I was looking at one person, then another person, and someone was filming me, and I was like, there's a hornet on me! And then eventually Kate, who is the amazing stage manager for Totem, she spotted what was going on. I think she saw the terror in my eyes and she came over and just like smacked it off me.
This is Emily Dust. You played a killer DJ set. This was your first gig of 2022. Describe the Totem. What does the space feel like?
Yeah, it's amazing. So it's a new area. I hadn't played it before, but I'd kind of heard little bits about it and I was like obviously excited about the fact it was an all-female build, which is, you know, amazing because it's just nice to feel that. I think sometimes people put like lineups on that are all female and they shout about that and it's great, but actually if you want to do something to represent women in the music industry and especially in the live industry, you also have to look at behind the scenes, because like as a DJ you come on at the last point in the production, and like everybody who's been involved in this before then, you know, that diversity really matters as well. And so yeah, it was exciting to play for that reason, but it was also like the amount of effort that was put into kind of dressing the stage, dressing the area, so it felt like you were walking into a sort of, I don't know, like a kind of desert rave. It was amazing. And I think for me that's one of the things I really love about playing festivals, and I love about playing Glastonbury in particular, the Southeast Corner, is the amount of work that goes into like the kind of theatrical side of it. So it's not just the music, and like that's what makes festival special, but particularly Glastonbury, is like, because you can, people want to come and have that sense of like being somewhere else and like completely losing themselves. And you can, I was saying to my friend last night, I was just like, you know, so many people are going to have so many experiences in like just 24 hours. Like your life might change in a couple of minutes, and all of that is because you like walk into somewhere, it surprises you and you're like, this is amazing. So you feel free, and yeah, it's amazing, really. It's really fun.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a bit about what it's like? Because as you said, you are the last part of that production bit. So do you want to tell us what it's like when you do get the chance to work with a female team or a team that has been led by women?
Like, the thing is, like when I think about it in relation to the Common, they've had a commitment to gender equality for a while, you know, like they've got gender balance on stage, so it's not a surprise to me that they're doing it. It's more a surprise that like other people aren't. And I think I like the fact it's part of it, but it's not, they're not like marketing it on that, they're not like come and see the all female area, like, because that to me, like I've said this a few times, but female DJs are not a genre. Yeah. Like I don't play female music, I play like music that everyone else plays and music that nobody plays. But like, so I think if you market something because it's women, people don't necessarily know what they're getting. So you just need to market it like this is a sick stage, you're going to have a great time, and behind that you're also supporting a lot of people who don't always get the chances that they should get for various reasons. So I guess that's like why it's important, and it's just nice to be part of that as well.
The Common's newest venue was built by women and run by women. The iconography is of four goddesses, and the live visuals are from Limbic Cinema, who made the space feel otherworldly. We caught up with the creative director of this incredible stage.
I'm Natasha Mortimer. I am creative director and co-founder of Imaginarium, which is a design agency that was set up in the pandemic. And so we've been going about a year and a bit. And yeah, Steve asked me if I wanted to take on Totem this year, or actually it was supposed to be 3 years ago, but yeah, then this year I was design and build manager for Totem, and I made the decision, or at least approached Steve and Kerry, to see if I could do a 100% female build team, which was really important to me because having been a manager from maybe the age of 25 on sites, being very aware that it's a very male-dominated industry, and realising pretty quickly that you get questioned all the time, and if your tone isn't quite correct, you can be taken in the wrong way, and having to really prove yourself, and it has grated on me maybe for a few years. And I've met so many amazing, talented women in this industry since working in it for the last 5-6 years. And I knew that it could be done, and it needed to be done to be proved that it shouldn't be a prejudice. Gender equality within the events industry is one issue, and it's maybe a first step, but diversity is definitely a much bigger issue. And that's something, I feel like there's three main issues in the events industry at the moment. It's gender equality, diversity, and sustainability. And I feel like, yeah, this is one of the steps to help diversity as well, by having an all-female team and trying to reduce, yeah, just the prejudice that people have. Or what I've discovered about this particular team in finding the right women for the team is, yeah, it does take a bit more looking to find the right skilled people, but they do exist, and also giving people a chance. to push themselves. You know, not everyone has been to festivals when they were younger or knows about the industry, and I think that's a really big problem in terms of diversity, is that you don't get a lot of Black or BAME people at festivals, and they don't even know that this isn't even a world. There's a lot of festivals that are built up on volunteer work, which, you know, is great in one sense because it does give people opportunities, but it also means that others who maybe can't afford that situation don't have the opportunity. And I think just to be able to invite people, you know, not as a skilled worker, but just to come and like ask questions on site, or, you know, just come down for a day, is super important in making that first step. And I think everyone could do more towards that as well, basically.
How has it kind of changed your approach to coming to work? Because this is, even though it's so much fun being at Glastonbury, it is essentially work. Like, how is it, does it change anything about how you look at work when you come to an all-female or a space that's kind of led by a lot of feminine energy?
I think what's nice about it is that there's no bravado, and no one is feeling self-conscious about their skills or ability, and they're more confident to put themselves forward for something. I think particularly with festival build and event work, it can be seen as a disadvantage to not have enough strength, like physical strength, which obviously isn't a thing that, you know, that's just a natural thing. But actually, working with a female team, there is always a way to do something. You just need to find the trick that will help you do it. For instance, I mean, the totem set that it's a fully recycled set, and the set was previously made with 40mm box steel frame, 9mm ply, a ton of polycarb, and then fiberglass on top, and the set flats are 3 meters by 2 meters wide. They are ridiculously heavy. It takes four people to lift one. And to have a team of females managing those sets and like working with them and putting them into position was amazing. So it was the first quite complex maneuver that we had to do as a all-female team, and bless the site guys, because they were kind of around like offering some advice, which was, they were very good at staying back and being very aware that they shouldn't try to get involved. But once we got going, yeah, I had Hannah in the telly, I had Jem and Maria climbing in the SCAF tower, and there was me like leading, like giving signals to the telly of like where to go, and then Sophie on the other side holding the ropes. And it was just, I felt very emotional at that point, because I have never seen that situation with such a complex maneuver, lifting this incredibly heavy set flat high up into some SCAF. And it was just five women problem solving and working out how to do it. And that was the moment I was like, wow, it's always four men or like all men, or at least, you know, maybe one token woman. And that was really amazing to see and very empowering.
Yeah, I can even see now, like, it's like the thought of it is kind of, yeah. I mean, that's something really special for you to be able to take forward and to, like, you know, almost everything you do, but definitely your work, like, you know, that image of seeing five women just kind of get a task done and do it wicked. No, how do you feel when you see how people react to the space? Because I know a lot of people have kind of walked in and been like, wow, like, where am I? What is this? How does it feel for you?
Seeing people's faces like drop or looks of amazement always makes you just feel really proud and happy, and it makes you feel like you've done your job well. And it reminds you that you're not just doing it for you, that you're doing it for everyone else who gets to experience this for the first time.
Yeah.
I remember people seeing the first music stage I ever built and just being quite overwhelmed at like the joy or like the amazement in everyone's faces. Yeah. The lighting designer in particular on that one had done an amazing job, because it was in a warehouse. It was one of the Boomtown crew parties, and it was all completely pitch black and just smoke everywhere whilst everyone filed into this room that they didn't even know existed. And then, yeah, everyone just slowly, as the smoke started to disappear, the lighting started to like flash on bits of the stage, building up, and then the musicians started and you couldn't really see them. And then, yeah, it just built up and up and up, and then suddenly the musicians just like went into chorus, and the whole thing was lit up and everyone just went wild. And I was just, I don't know, this is the other thing, like, not just as set designers or builders, like the lighting designers and sound, everyone involved just all has such importance in creating those moments. And it, when seeing it all come together and seeing everyone's faces is just, yeah, that's always an amazing moment to see.
Brilliant. Why do you think people kind of enjoy almost walking into another space and, like, also taking in the visuals? Like, they're there for the sound, obviously, they're there for the DJ or the musician, but the visuals is really important. Why do you think it is?
I think people love escapism. And so the agency that we run, Imaginarium, we do all things immersive or experiential, and it's all about the full sensory overload, whether that's visual, sound, taste, you know, all the senses. And it does allow people to completely escape into another world, forget their other life for a bit, and just be free to be who they want to be in that moment. And I think it's a form of meditation. It means that your brain can just release and relax and just be away with the fairies for, you know, 10 minutes, an hour, a whole festival, however long you want it to be. But that full encompassing space that's a sensory overload will help you do that. And I think that's why people love it.
The Common is unique in the way that it brings together voices from all over the world and marries the traditions of ritual and ceremony with hardcore rave. One of the ways it does this is through the Totem Talks. The Totem will not just bend and change your mind at night. The carefully curated guest speakers will take you from the cerebral to the celestial, the ceremonial to the spiritual. They open people's minds to the voices of society's global disruptors and healers to envision a new world. Indigenous voices are central to the Common, as we heard in episode 1 during the opening ceremony, and that's reflected in the Totem Talks.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the space and reaching out as well and wanting to hear my voice. My name is Witzomit. I'm from Mexico, but you can also call me Adam, you know. And I am an indigenous tattoo artist and body piercer from Mexico. So I pay my bills with tattooing and piercing, but I also run some ceremonies. And I've been running them since a kid because my family is in the culture as well. And the Common invited me to give a talk about how we indigenous people can help the world situation right now, you know, because, you know, like all the pollution and everything that is going on in different parts of the world that is affecting everybody, you know, like we're going to be talking about that with some other indigenous people from some other places in the world, like from the Amazon jungle as well, and another guys from southern Mexico.
Why do you think it's important for the Common to include indigenous culture? Because they've obviously reached out to you and they've reached out to other people that have a really strong connection to their indigenous cultures. Why do you think it's so important for that to be here at the Common?
We are having trouble to make our voices heard, you know, like any space could be good for us, you know, but sadly, like back in the other continent, in the USA or Mexico, you know, like most of the times we just like find censorship, you know, like banning and stuff.
Yeah.
And it could be good, you know, like not only in this space, but like in some other spaces where people want to work with the community to hear our voices, you know, because we are part of the community as well. And also because we know some techniques to work in community as well and to take care of Mother Earth. So that's why I think people can benefit from listening to us, you know, just a little bit, you know, just giving us some space. We don't really want to give orders or like anybody to follow any orders, you know, just to share and see what we have to say. Because, yes, as I was saying, you know, like, we have a difficult time to find places to talk as well. And also the Common seems to be like more like a cultural area, So like bringing different cultures from the world, this is always positive, you know? Especially for a country like the UK, you know? Well, like an island or a country like the UK, which has been like all over the world, you know? Like it could be good to, yeah, to, I mean, or to listen, you know, to take some knowledge as well from the stuff that we have to share, you know, like the old techniques that we still keeping. Because it seems that, yeah, like, I mean, like, the whole UK used to, like ban some practices and, like, some languages and some uses in some places, you know? And now that they are realizing that they are positive and they are, like, healing as well, they look at us as well, you know, which is okay, you know? Like, we kept the traditions and the ceremonies for that long, for that, you know, to share them. Not just for us, you know, like... Everything that we have to share and say is like inclusive, no, you know, like no exclusive. And a place like the Commons is giving us a space for that. And maybe the other places can give like indigenous voices more spaces as well, you know. Even the, I don't know, like the pyramid stage or the other stages, you know, as well.
How magical would that be if, you know, if you were to do the opening ceremony for the whole of Glastonbury? That would be like, you know, on the pyramid stage, on one of the biggest stages. It would be amazing to have, you know, other cultures bring sort of like indigenous wisdom to a massive group of people.
The Totem Talks holds a space for frontline visionaries and changemakers and provides an arena to openly tackle challenging issues that can be overlooked in the reverie of Glastonbury. Just like the rest of the Common, it is open with a ceremony each day to cleanse the space and set intentions of curiosity and exploration.
So my name is Hannah Kendaru, and I use she, her pronouns, and I am from the lands of volcanoes and the lands of meadows. I'm a mixed-race Indonesian-British breathwork facilitator and embodiment facilitator, deeply concerned and working with embodied social justice and decolonial healing. I had the privilege of sharing some of my work as part of the Totem Talks presented at the Common. It is part of an initiative to bring active and conscious community into the Common, not just as a free music movement, but a freedom movement, and freedom in the sense of freedom in the real sense, not just as a lack of consequence, but a choice of responsibility. And so I had the honor of introducing what decolonial healing is and what that might look like for our modern context, and what it means to move away from not only personal processes of healing, but historical, collective, institutional healing. And so I hope I did a little bit of justice to the work that I do, and it was a really beautiful moment to be in that space with the organisers, but with also the brothers and sisters from around the world.
She's small and smiley and makes a space feel welcoming. But once her talk begins, an intensity comes over her and left the audience hanging off each word. Here's an excerpt from her captivating talk on Saturday afternoon.
I'll tell you a little bit about my story. I grew up, my childhood was in Indonesia. My dad is Indonesian and my mum is white English. So my childhood was in Indonesia and then my teenagehood was in the UK. The culture that I grew up in the UK meant that I was othered in so many ways, in so many forms that taught me to hate myself in various different ways. Taught me that I didn't belong, that I could never belong unless I assimilated. And so through that process, I was assimilating, losing my Indonesian language, losing my connection to the culture, the songs, the parables, the myths, the legends. And in that process, I was taught to admire and to aspire to be white. And I recently came and traveled to West Africa, Gambia. And this luck to end up there, this was the mouth of the River Gambia. And this is the river that extracted 4 million of those living, beautiful souls out of the country and into the slave trade. And when I was living there, I was not Indonesian. I was white. And so in that moment when I was living on that river, having been taught to want to be white so much, I was wanting so badly that I wasn't. And so I'm walking the path of both the colonizer and the colonized, walking the path of the oppressor and the oppressed, of both the victim and the perpetrator. And so this lens, all this work that I have had to navigate and are still processing, still feeling, still breathing, and I'm still breathing, has led me to a really beautiful perspective, one that I am so grateful for. I'm grateful that I can see. I'm grateful that I can feel, and it means that I can feel you. I can feel you in your pain of not only being conquerors, but being the first conquered. The ones forcing other folks to forget, and yet you were the first to be forced to forget. And that pain is so heavy. I ask you now, what song do you sing when you are sad? What song do your ancestors sing when you are sad, when you are mourning, when you are grieving? And I'm sorry when you don't know. I'm sorry that you don't know. And so this is the process. It's a process of remembering.
How did you begin that journey? You asked you kind of threw a very important question out to us in the audience at your talk. And you said, what song will you sing when you're sad? The way I interpreted that is like, you know,
are you connected basically to your heritage? Do you know kind of the songs of your own people? How did you start your journey? How did you get into it? You know, was it as simple as talking to your parents, grandparents, you know, family? Or did you do something completely different to that?
So the path to that wisdom is multiple. And I also don't think I'm necessarily at a space where I know all my songs, you know. I know a couple of my songs. So I'm also always in this process of connection or reconnection, reweaving. But primarily it was actually going back to the places, right? Meeting with family members, asking some really difficult, challenging questions, getting curious, not for a state of origin, but just a knowledge, right? And so our fractured lineages are just threads. And so when we start to unpack what that might look like for us, we're weaving again. And so that wisdom might come in the lands that you come from, but it might also come in dreams, it might come in prayer, it might come in breathwork, embodiment, movement. It might come when you taste some food from your space, you know, and start offering that to the bones and the soil in your body. I'm always in awe of other people's ways, right? And them telling me, okay, this is how I found that, or this is how I did that. And unfortunately, those of us who have been colonized, oftentimes our records are fragmented, right, or don't even exist. And so we need to get creative.
That's kind of perfectly led into my next question, which is the common has kind of a really big history of, you know, pushing people that are kind of putting subcultures to the forefront, putting voices that are unheard to the forefront, putting voices that are marginalized in sounds and music that is marginalized. Can you tell us a little bit about why it's important for you to have been able to hold space in the common to do your talk and to share your thoughts about our history? And it is our history. I think it's kind of pushed onto the global majority, and it's like, oh, this is your history. Mm. It doesn't affect white people, but actually it's all of our histories. And there's a kind of a joint trauma there. Can you tell us why it was important for you to be able to bring your talk to the common?
So the common is a space that really tries to navigate what it means to live with agency, with power, and not power over, but with self-empowerment, with freedom to express, freedom of movement, freedom to move, listen, dance. And our histories of oppression and colonization have been processes of our own heritage, processes of cultural denial, right? Where our own spiritual practices have been forced out of us. And so being in this space, which is inherently decentralized, it's organized, but through agency and liberation. And liberation in a sense that doesn't focus on lack of consequence, but into choice of responsibility. I think for the common and what it's trying to do and what they are trying to do as a group of people is always deeply attentive to our society. It is always in context. Right. The evolution of the common has always been in direct response to what is happening in the world. And Glastonbury, as a powerful festival, as a magnet of movement, not just of immigration, but of resource and energy, it can be really easy to tip the balance into consumerism, tip the balance into escapism. And though those are also important parts of our own self-expression and humanity, there needs to be a balance, and the common holds that. It has been a real honor to be invited and to be part of this kind of radical space, challenging the ways that we navigate hierarchy and popularity, and really be in the subculture of cultures, right, and choosing to create our own. So
what would you suggest? A simple breathwork exercise that is not too scary, not too deep, won't make you pass out and never want to do it again.
Yeah, so there are three key pillars to breathwork, right? The first one is breath hygiene, which is our breath functionality. It's kind of our daily breathing of clarifying and cleansing. The second is breath optimization, which is, you know, breath holds and elitism and optimizing your capacity. And then the third is our deep breathwork journeys. So these are kind of long breathing workshops and ceremonies that invite us into different states of consciousness. So there are very many. But what I will invite you into is an invitation into 30 conscious connected breaths. And a conscious connected breath is a breath that you choose. So you choose to breathe. And oftentimes when we breathe, we are breathing with a pause in between the inhale and the exhale. And so I really invite you to connect that breath together. And I invite you to choose a channel, which means you choose either in and out through your nose or in and out through your mouth. And so I invite you to do 30 conscious connected breaths, and then take on the last inhale, hold your breath until whatever feels comfortable, and then soften into your body.
That's really nice. Thank you for offering up that breathwork experience that anyone can try at home.
The impact of this talk on some of the audience members was profound. We noticed that two women, a mother and a daughter, had been particularly affected. So we asked what they thought the impact of Hannah's talk was.
Integrity, truth, really well-held space, the medicine that Millie can feel something beyond overwhelm, that the world is falling apart. And you can see something deeper happening. Just truth. And a really held space, right? That was what's really amazing out here at Glastonbury. You know, there's pockets. It's a beautiful pocket. It transforms in the night, but here it's right here in the sunshine, the afternoon. There is such sacredness. Yeah, grateful. Thank you.
Hope as well, and an understanding that things will get better, and like there's, it's not just an individual, like. If other people feel it, then that feeling's going to like duplicate and expand, and yeah, just like finally understanding, like, 'cause you never get an opportunity to feel and like open your mind to these kind of things. So it's just like a relief.
In the next and final episode of The Common People, we hear how open minds build community, connection, and otherworldly experiences.